And this is Andrew Peach with World Business Report here on the BBC World Service. Thank you for your company. On the way, the head of the US financial regulator, Gary Gensler, will resign the day Donald Trump becomes president after they fell out over cryptocurrencies.
It's led to a field that's rife with fraud and hucksters and grifters, and the investing public around the globe has lost too much money.
Demonstrations against Volkswagen's cost-cutting plans and a strike in 10 days from now, with no deal on wages or factory closures. The Swedish firm Northvolt, once Europe's strongest competitor to Chinese battery makers, has filed for bankruptcy.
In China, over 50% of the cars being sold are either battery electric or plug-in hybrid. And guess which cars they're not buying, therefore, in China right now? That is the Western car companies.
And how China says it'll help businesses cope with what it calls unreasonable foreign trade restrictions. What could they have in mind? Don't forget, we love hearing from you. Do send us a message or a voice note on WhatsApp. It's 0044 330 678 3033, or you can email world.business@bbc.co.uk. The head of the US financial regulator, Gary Gensler, will resign on the day Donald Trump becomes president. On social media, Mr. Gensler said, "I thank President Biden for entrusting me with this incredible responsibility. The SEC has met our mission and enforced the law without fear or favour." Now, this may not make that much difference because Mr. Trump had already said he would sack Mr. Gensler on day one. The president-elect and Mr. Gensler have very different views, particularly about cryptocurrencies. I asked our business correspondent Jonathan Josephs what Gary Gensler had been known for at the Securities and Exchange Commission.
Well, Andrew, Gary Gensler has spent his entire career in and around financial services. He had a long spell at the top Wall Street bank, Goldman Sachs. He also served at the US Treasury during the Bill Clinton administration. So he goes back. But apart from that, he spent time in regulatory roles before he came to the Securities and Exchange Commission. Now, when we spoke to him in September, I got the impression that he was quite a straight talker who didn't like too much fuss around what he saw as a fairly simple mission, really, and that is to protect consumers from the worst excesses of the financial markets. And he was also acutely aware that the US is the world's biggest economy and as such brings in money from around the world. So apart from trying to regulate crypto, there was a bunch of other things during his 3.5 years so far in the role, which included getting companies to better disclose the risks they face from climate change. And he was more successful, though, with new rules on some of the architecture of the financial markets.
But it's on cryptocurrencies where there's been controversy. So what's been the approach to crypto while he's been in charge?
Well, Andrew, when it comes to crypto, I sensed from him there was some frustration that there was something that was such a small part of the financial markets in terms of dollars, but that was getting so much attention. That said, he did draw an interesting comparison to the 1920s when there was a massive US stock market crash, which in the end led to the founding of the SEC to protect consumers. And he felt that that crash had happened because consumers didn't have enough protection. And he was worried that the same was now true of cryptocurrencies.
This is a field that has come along, and just because they're recording their crypto assets on a new accounting ledger, they say, we don't think we want to comply with the time-tested laws. And what has it led to? It's led to a field that's rife with fraud and hucksters and grifters, and the investing public around the globe has lost too much money due to this non-compliance with time-tested protections for investors.
So, Andrew, during Gary Gensler's reign, crypto has been something of a priority, even if it wasn't the only one. And we've seen that in the fact that there were 46 enforcement actions in the crypto world last year. That was a record number. And notably this year, two founders of the world's biggest crypto firms, FTX's Sam Bankman-Fried and Binance's Zhangpeng Zhou, have both been sent to jail. Notably, Sam Bankman-Fried's customers lost billions of dollars that many of them are still trying to get back. And that does somewhat highlight the risk that Gary Gensler has spoken of when it comes to crypto. But there's also been a lot of court cases about it. And one of the big points that those have been contesting is whether crypto even falls in the SEC's remit. That hasn't been finally resolved. And there's also a bill that's been going through Congress. It's been passed by the House, but not the Senate. And its critics argue that it will give less protection to consumers. And it's still unclear, though, if that will become law before President Biden leaves office.
The crypto sector don't like Gary Gensler at all. And what they say is that the US is missing out on all the benefits it could bring to the economy because of all the regulation.
That's absolutely true. They see the tough enforcement action as stifling innovation. They think there's not enough clarity about what is and isn't allowed. And so they are quite pleased that Donald Trump won the election. The industry spent a lot of money trying to influence those elections, in particular for Congress rather than the presidency, because they thought that if they donated to candidates who would support them when it comes to light touch regulation, that would be more favorable to their future chances of making money in the crypto industry. And they also highlight the fact that crypto is something that is global in nature. So if the US isn't a friendly environment, it will just up sticks and go somewhere else, and that will benefit the other jurisdictions. And I think that got through to Donald Trump, because on the campaign trail he was saying that he would make the US the cryptocurrency of the world, which is a far cry from when he dismissed Bitcoin as a scam a few years ago. And he's also, it should be said, launched his own crypto venture. But for Gary Gensler at the SEC, a booming industry depends on having a good safety net for investors.
Well, I say that the best way for technologies to thrive that want to access the U.S. capital markets is to do so within these time-tested rules. You wouldn't want to put a new car on a road and say, no speed limit. There's a reason that we have basic rules on the highways, and there's reasons we have basic rules of finance.
That was Gary Gensler speaking to my colleague Jonathan Josephs just a few weeks ago. Today's news is music to the ears of the crypto community in the US. I've been talking to Kristen Smith, who's the CEO of the Blockchain Association.
Gary Gensler is going to go, and everyone in the crypto community is incredibly excited. Over the past 3.5 years, we felt like we've been boxed into a corner. We weren't able to have conversations for finding a regulatory pathway forward. And all he did was come after the industry with litigation through a regulation by enforcement technique. So we are happy to get him out of the way. And, and hopefully in the new administration, we'll be able to have a more productive dialogue.
He says the industry is rife with fraud and grifters.
We don't think that's the case. I mean, certainly the industry has had its challenges over the past couple of years with FTX and others. But mostly we have an industry that is trying to build a better financial services system, a better internet. And they're using technology that is different than we see typically regulated by the SEC. And so we need to have a more thoughtful and creative approach so that it makes sense for the technology. And so, I think we're really excited. I think this is going to unleash a fresh wave of investment and a fresh wave of innovation. As we'll see in the next few years, we're going to be able to build a better system for investors and for consumers than we have today.
Having been very suspicious himself, President-elect Trump is now a convert. He's now a really enthusiast for crypto. So perhaps it doesn't really matter who replaces Mr. Gensler because you've got the president on side.
Well, yes, but the people that the president puts into place is incredibly important because they're the ones that set the agenda for the agency. So we're absolutely thrilled that President Trump has come around on crypto. We've found that as people learn more, they often go from being anti-crypto to pro-crypto, and it's never the other way around. And so I think that under President Trump's leadership, we can achieve the vision here in the U.S. that this is going to be the crypto capital of the world. And to do that, we need to have the right people in key agencies like the SEC, like the Treasury Department, like the CFTC. And so we're hopeful that as Trump is looking through names, that he'll put someone with crypto experience into those slots.
There's likely to be less regulation. There's likely to be less policing. What else do you want from the next person in the SEC?
I would actually challenge your question there. We're not looking for less regulation. We're looking for appropriate regulation. Because right now, today, the SEC only has authority to regulate securities and securities exchanges. And what we want is to find a way to regulate the cash spot markets for crypto that makes sense for crypto. Most of these digital assets are not securities, they're commodities. And there is no law on the books in the US for how to regulate the cash commodity markets. And so what we need is new regulation, appropriate regulation that makes sense and not try to put a square peg in a round hole like Gary Gensler was trying to do.
Okay, but I would have thought you'd settle for less regulation.
Well, right now we have no regulation on the books. And so, having securities regulation, just doesn't fit. It's the wrong type of regulation. So we need something that makes sense. You know, if you have these digital assets that can only be transferred by broker dealers or have to, you know, fill out the requirements for disclosures at the SEC, the networks fall apart. They just don't work. And so what we need is something appropriate so that we can have consumers protected, but also encourage innovation.
Donald Trump isn't even president yet, and the market is absolutely soaring on the back of his re-election.
Yeah, it's interesting, the response. I mean, I think it goes to show the chilling impact that the regulation by enforcement approach that Gary Gensler has taken has had on the industry. And just the thought that this is something that is no longer going to be there, I think, has brought a lot of new interest into this space. I've been talking with analysts that are working at large banks, and they're seeing a tremendous amount of interest from new institutional players who are wanting to come in. We're also seeing governments interested in potentially putting Bitcoin and other assets on their balance sheet. And so I think that the change in leadership is bringing new opportunities in the crypto space. And it's something that all of us who work in the industry are very excited about.
Kristen Smith, CEO of the Blockchain Association. Live to Kerry Leahy now, economist at Columbia University in New York. Kerry, thank you for being with us. What do you make of the head of the SEC announcing his resignation in a few weeks?
Well, no surprise there. Unfortunately, he undercut some of his effectiveness because he was an individual known for having pretty sharp elbows. And at the same time, he didn't make the stand that the crypto supporters certainly didn't want, that they would call something that they think is a commodity a stock which could have been regulated. It's important to remember that the only area of FTX when it blew up that did okay was the part of FTX that actually had some oversight from the commodities exchange. So you do need to have some regulation. You do need to have reserves, but at the moment that's not happening. And I still would argue and tell our listeners out there that remember, crypto is like an asset. It's not unlike going to the track. It has to be money that you can afford to lose.
Kerry, stay with us. More coming up. You're listening to World Business Report here on the BBC World Service.
This is the man who drives a Volkswagen. Everyone must have something in life he can rely on.
That was another Volkswagen from the 1980s, the company then a byword for reliability. Things have become a bit more unsettled, though. The union representing workers in Germany has called on members to take strike action from the 1st of December. This comes after fresh talks with the company's management over wages and factory closures failed to achieve a breakthrough. Earlier, thousands of workers staged a rally outside VW's headquarters, protesting about drastic cost-cutting plans there. I've been talking to Christian Muskens, who covers VW for the German financial newspaper Deutsche Allgemeine Zeitung.
There is a regulation under German strike law that, like, a peace obligation must be observed. And this applies as long as negotiations on a new company wage agreement are ongoing. They are ongoing at the moment, but the peace obligation ends on December 1st. And from then on, warning strikes are possible. And that is what the union will do. The union and management, they are far apart from each other.
Would you expect something to shift and for the dispute to be solved before the 1st of December? Because they've still got a couple of weeks.
No, I wouldn't expect that. VW has been trying to reduce its cost for years, but management has never managed to prevail against the union and the state owners. 20% of the voting rights belong to the state of Lower Saxony, and there is also a special law on VW, which gives the works council and the state special rights. So the years went by, and nothing has been done on the high costs.
And after the 1st of December, once the action then begins, what does that look like? What will happen?
My expectation is that we will see the warning strikes from the 1st December on, when the peace obligation ends. The union wants to solve this before Christmas, you know, but if you ask me, there's lots of risk that this will go on far into the next year.
Right, because, I mean, from the way you describe it, the management clearly need to bring costs down and the unions are holding firm on the rights and their pay demands that they've had until now.
Volkswagen is a very, for the Germans, it's like a symbol. I mean, everybody knows it. People have grown up with it and they have very good agreements with the unions on the wages. People who work there are really proud of this. And the politicians and the whole society supported this in a way. And as long as Volkswagen was like making high profits, that wasn't so much of a problem. But now they're really in trouble because they used to be very successful in China, but the market shares are going down there and profits from there is not coming anymore. And it's not covering the problems that they have in Europe anymore. They have some technical issues and they have to bring their costs down.
And the whole car industry is suffering with a whole range of problems, like the costs, slowing sales in China, weaker than expected sales of electric vehicles. We've seen Ford cut thousands of jobs across Europe only this week. So VW is no longer immune from all of that.
No, I mean, it's hitting the whole German car industry. A lot of problems are now coming together. I mean, in China, they are no longer as successful as they used to be, and that's hitting VW as well as Mercedes and BMW. Many of the companies relied on the regulation of the European Union that the whole market will shift to electric cars. And what we see in Germany and in other markets right now is that people are simply not buying the cars. They are too expensive. The range is not high enough. You have problems with the energy grid. And in this situation, many people say, I don't want to buy an electric car. I mean, look at VW. They have two huge plants in Eastern and Northern Germany completely changed to the production of electric cars. And now the utilization of the factories is really low and people have not enough work. And that's the situation the company has to deal with now. They really have to bring their costs down. The situation has changed for them.
That's Christian Muskens from Deutsche Allgemeine Zeitung. Now, the Swedish battery maker Northvolt, once Europe's strongest competitor to Chinese battery manufacturers, has filed for bankruptcy protection in the US. The company operated its main plant in Skellefteå near the Arctic Circle, and it opened there in 2021. Never managed to compete, though, with the established battery makers of China and South Korea. I've been talking to the clean energy commentator, Michael Liebrich, who hosts the Cleaning Up podcast.
I think it's clearly, first of all, it's very bad news for a lot of people who've invested and also, of course, a lot of people who are employed and who work there. And I think it does highlight that Europe has a real fight on its hands if it's going to be competitive in these new energy technologies.
Why?
Fundamentally, I'm afraid Europe is a high cost production location. Northvolt tried to beat that by having low cost hydropower in Sweden to start with. But fundamentally, we've got high cost energy and high cost labor with high levels of labor protection. And we are in ruthless competition with Asian companies who not only have all of the lower costs, and you can argue that some of that's a little unfair, but they've been doing this for decades. They are very, very good at high volume manufacturing. And I'm afraid Europe has lost its touch.
All those factors you've outlined have always been the case. They've certainly been the case going back much longer than 2021. So was this company always on a hiding to nothing, do you think?
How can I put this? I've never been a huge fan of Northvolt for exactly the reason I think it's a very, very tough thing that they tried to do. I mean, I give them credit for trying. It was very ambitious and they went in at scale. I mean, this is a company that raised 15 billion euros. So they haven't been tentative at all. And I give them credit for that. They've executed perhaps as well as you could within the European context. Although it has to also be said that they haven't managed to scale up their manufacturing. They've had a number of accidents, a number of workplace accidents and people killed. That stuff should really not be happening. So I think it's a combination of very difficult cost structure in Europe, but also perhaps not the execution that they might have wanted to deliver.
Something that has changed since 2021 is much less transition to electric vehicles using batteries than we might perhaps have expected to be the case by now.
You have to be very careful not to over emphasize that because there's lots of talk about this EV slowdown. So in Europe, if you exclude a small number of countries, principally Germany, by the way, there has been absolutely no slowdown, no quarter that was lower than the year before, you know, the equivalent of a year previous. There's a lot of seasonality in car buying. But if you go a year previous, there's no slowdown. There has been a slowdown in Germany, a lot of which actually has been driven by the fact that the EU regulatory targets were very lax by 2024. They kind of plateaued and off they go again in 2025. So a lot of car companies have said, why would we sell EVs in 2024 when we can wait a bit and sell them in 2025? And so that's been very unfortunate for poor old Northvolt, because they wanted to have customers who are desperate to buy batteries because they had to meet their regulatory requirements. And those regulations had a kind of soft spot. So that's really what's going on there.
Another factor to this story is about Volkswagen. They've already had a bad day, as we've been discussing on the programme. They're a big Northvolt shareholder.
Yes. I mean, again, partly, I suppose they're hoist with their own petard, because they have been playing the let's make as many EVs as we have to for regulatory reasons. And they have... they've discovered that actually the Chinese car companies don't do that. Here's a piece of very important context. In China, over 50% of the cars being sold are either battery electric or plug-in hybrid. One car in two. And guess which cars they're not buying, therefore, in China right now? And that is the Western car companies, the Volkswagens, the BMWs, the Mercedeses, the Volvos. They're having a terrible time in China. So, you know, what you've got then is a very soft market in China, which has been very profitable for these companies. And in Europe, they've been soft pedaling. And of course, now you have companies like BYD arriving in Europe. So it's a very, very sort of threatening alignment of the planets.
That's Michael Liebreit. This is Kerry Leahy from Columbia University in New York. From all sides, the car industry very much under pressure.
That's right. And we didn't even get to the bad news about Ford from yesterday. It's clear that the early adopters of EV are ending up with egg on their face because of people's concerns about being able to drive them long distances and on journeys. And also the fact that they have a cost structure in Europe, which is too high to persevere another 3 to 5 years. And so you have a lot of pressure on the industry. For VW, it's long term on costs and short term on getting wrapped around EV and the slowdown in global EV sales, particularly in China.
Kerry, thank you. Kerry Leahy is from Columbia University in New York. We're going to stick with China, which has announced it's going to help its export sector cope with external trade barriers, ready for more of them to be introduced when Donald Trump becomes US president. The Chinese Ministry of Commerce said it would help businesses actively respond to unreasonable foreign trade restrictions and create a good external environment for exports. Wendy Cutler is from the Asian Society Policy Institute in Washington. She's also a former US trade negotiator. Wendy, thank you for being with us on World Business Report. Does this show that Beijing's actually quite worried about these tariffs being threatened by Donald Trump?
Well, I think it's not. This is not just about the Trump tariffs. This plan has been in the works for a while, and it comes at a time when Chinese exports are increasing all over the world, up 12.7% in October over October of the year before in all corners of the world. Weak domestic demand in China, and we've seen tariffs in being hiked not only in the United States, but in Canada, in Europe, in South Africa, in Indonesia, and the list goes on and on. So again, I think this program has been in the works for a while, but it's taken on increased urgency because of the election of Donald Trump.
The Chinese government's got a 9-point plan for this, but what can it actually do to help Chinese businesses fend off the threat of tariffs and other protectionist measures?
Well, in this plan, they announced measures to help promote exports, particularly with respect to e-commerce and agriculture. It talks about providing more financing for exports, more insurance for exports, and providing assistance to their companies to respond to anti-dumping and countervailing duty cases filed by foreign governments.
Can China get back to strong growth by just boosting its own domestic market? Or does it have to rely on exports in the end?
Well, exports have always been an important part of Chinese economic growth. But again, the exports have taken a disproportionate role in the economic growth now, given the weak economy and given weak domestic demand in China.
We talked quite a bit on this program today about how China is outpacing Europe in terms of effective production of one thing and another. So how do all these things add up? How can China be beating the competition but still struggling?
Well, again, China is exporting as much as it can, low-price subsidized goods. It's had a really good ride. But now you're seeing responses by governments all over the world as this influx of Chinese exports are displacing domestic manufacturing and domestic goods. It's not a sustainable situation, but that doesn't mean that China's going to stop exporting. It means that it needs to get back to a more reasonable level of exports. And frankly, it needs to eliminate its unfair trade practices.
And I suppose it could get even more competitive. It could become even more productive.
Absolutely. I mean, we look at clean energy, we look at electric vehicles, we look at a whole host of products where Chinese production and manufacturers are becoming more competitive. But again, this competitiveness is based on huge outlays from the Chinese government, not only direct subsidies, but all types of assistance that kind of flows all through their economy. And that's what foreign governments are responding to.
Wendy, thank you. Wendy Cutler from the Asian Society, used to be a US trade negotiator. Much more online for you about today's stories, bbc.com/business. From me, Andrew Peach, and the team here, thank you for being with us.